this year in March. Normally in the past, being in another country would have been always the same pattern for me. I immediately switched into like hustle and grind mode because there were so many things on my mind that I needed to do. Even us being in the most beautiful countries of the world, like Colombia or Vietnam or Thailand, 2 weeks before we needed to leave, I always woke up with this feeling of shit. We've basically seen nothing. I always left those countries with a feeling of regret. And then when we booked Morocco, I decided to just do things differently. There was no access to my schedule if you were not working already with me, to be with my family, with my daughter, to just really enjoy this time. The funny thing is that we went to Morocco for 4 weeks. We had a beautiful time. My wife often told me that she was super amazed by how my energy shifted and how I was able to really be with them. And it was actually the most successful business month that I ever had in my career as being an entrepreneur. And that was so mind-blowing that I thought, okay, there is something here that I need to explore even more deeper.
I'm really, truly excited and happy to have you in the Core Impact Podcast. I would like to start directly with you asking if you have 1 minute to prepare yourself for an extremely important meeting, what would you do with this 1 minute? You can show us, even make an exercise if you like.
Yeah, I would probably do the same that I just did before we started here. Basically, my routine. So if you want, we can just do it together because it's super easy. So yeah, we can just close our eyes for a second. And without really changing anything, just connect to our breath. Feel the breath moving into our bellies, taking some deep breaths in through the nose, out through the nose. And then we just take 3 deep breaths together. On a count of 4, we inhale and we exhale on a count of 8. So you can exhale and then we inhale 1, 2, 3, 4, exhale 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, in again 2, 3, 4, exhale 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, last inhale 3, 4 and exhale 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Keep your eyes closed for just one more breath. Let your body find its natural rhythm again. And then just make sure you leave this inner space with a clear intention of how you want to show up when you open your eyes. Who do you want to be? And what's really important for you right now? And with this intention in mind, take a last deep inhale into your belly. Exhale and open your eyes again.
I love it. I love it, Patrick, and especially clear intention, what is important. There are many things I would like to talk with you about. The first question I would like to start with is, what is your why? What drives you to do what you do every day?
I would say that the why basically developed over the years of me being in my own journey of realizing who do I want to be and why am I here. So it's not that I like someday woke up and say, okay, that's my why and that's how I want to serve the world. It basically developed over the years in my own inner journey falling into this old trap of how performance and striving for big goals works in those days. I went down the rabbit hole with all the hustle and grind and all the stress that came with it. Probably not that close from a burnout. I never fell into it, thankfully, but would I have continued like I did for a couple more months or years, probably would have ran into a wall. And then I just realized over the years that there is another way for me. And then more and more, I started implementing this into the work with the people that I share space with, let it be athletes, let it be entrepreneurs, CEOs, leaders. And I basically saw that the main purpose of my life is to guide people out of this old limiting performance world where we suffer a lot into a new world where we can really impact the world on the highest scale possible for ourselves without losing ourselves, and in a world where we are able to thrive not on the cost of our health and our mental health, but really from a place of what I call soul-led performance, where we really feel connected to ourselves, to others, to the world, and where we feel that everything is really aligned and we have this almost unlimited amount of energy to really go for what is important for us.
Patrick, I feel your energy now while you are talking. This is something that also I like about you.
While you are listening to the Core Impact podcast, please take a moment to pause and share with me. How do you feel? Are you enjoying the conversation, feeling inspired, or something else? I would love to know your feelings in the comments.
I would like to know from you a personal story about one time when you felt you are moving in this state of from the old self to the new self, let's say, from the old self who wants to prove himself to the one who's free.
Yeah, the first example that actually comes to mind is not that far in the past, because it was just this year in March, even though I was working on this topic for years on end. But this was like a huge breakthrough for me, because over the years, I was traveling a lot with my wife. We were both like independent with our work, and we basically started traveling the world in 2018. And normally we have been to other places for like 3 to 6 months, and then we switched places, and we did this for almost 5 years until we knew that my wife is pregnant, and we kind of decided to settle more here into Valencia and make this our home base for now. And still sometimes we travel, and in March we decided to go to Morocco for a month. And normally in the past, being in another country would have been always the same pattern for me, because we came to this new country and I immediately, like in every place, switched into like hustle and grind mode, because there were so many things on my mind that I needed to do, and programs that I needed to design, and to-dos that I needed to finish. And basically I locked myself in for most of the time, even us being in the most beautiful countries of the world, like Colombia or Vietnam or Thailand or whatever it is. And then 2 weeks before we needed to leave, I always woke up with this feeling of shit. Now we've been here for 3 or 6 months in this country. We've basically seen nothing. I have always just been sitting in my home and working, or maybe even in a cafe and working there. And then we kind of tried to fit in every sightseeing spot that we could in the last 2 weeks to even at least get a bit of a feeling that we saw the country. But I always left those countries with a feeling of regret. And then when we booked Morocco in the spring of this year, I decided to just do things differently on a huge scale. So I plucked my calendar for a complete March. There was no access to my schedule. If you were not working already with me in one-on-one sessions, I didn't cancel them. I kept them, but I kind of switched them all together on one day in the week so that I would have like the complete other days free. And then I really kind of in the first days forced myself to really be in this relaxed mode of, okay, we are here to explore this country, to explore the city of Marrakesh, to be with my family, with my daughter, to just I really enjoy this time. And the first 2-3 days were kind of difficult to really quiet my mind and to really arrive at this place. But then after day 3, it kind of switched and I fell into such a deep relaxation that I was able to really enjoy the countryside and everything. And then mostly in the evenings when my wife and my daughter went to bed, I opened my laptop, I worked for like 2 hours, maybe something like that, did the most important things, really, like I did in the exercise that we did in the beginning, always thinking about, okay, what's the most important thing that I can do right now? Where's the biggest impact I can create now? And the funny thing is that we went to Morocco for 4 weeks. We had a beautiful time there. I was super relaxed. My wife often told me that she was super amazed by how my energy shifted and how I was able to really be with them. And at the end of the month, I look back and it was actually the most successful business month that I ever had in my career as being an entrepreneur. And that was so mind-blowing that I thought, okay, there is something here that I need to explore even more deeper than I had been in the last years. And that was basically another experience that just accelerated me on this path forward.
Now, you reminded me of, I heard you in another podcast saying, what is the most important part of the car, right? And I remember you said it's when you so because I think you experienced it also yourself, because if you cannot know how to stop, you don't have the time to stop and see, is it really this direction that I want to go to? Then you cannot keep going like that. And this is something that reminds me of, the direction is more important than how fast you are going, right?
Yeah, for sure. Direction matters way more than speed, especially in the beginning. And on the other side, having the right brakes will just help you to move around corners that are coming up on the road. Because if you have the fastest car on the planet and there are no brakes, there are only 2 options. You can either go full speed and then you will crash at the first corner, or you can go so slow that you don't need any brakes, but by that you will just be super slow and life will just be super boring. So the essence is really to have those brakes, like in a Formula One car, for example, and to be able to go fast as possible when you can and when you know the direction and when you want to, but then also be able to brake and to use the brakes and to slow down when there is a corner, when you need to take a stop in the pit lane, and then recharge yourself, look at the right direction and redirect yourself. So that is such an important tool that we can inhabit for ourselves.
You are the author of Flow Hacking. The first question here is, what is flow and do we need it all the time or only in specific times, for example, when we are working or performing something?
Depends on how we look at it, I would say. I kind of divided it in the book and that's how I see it, because there's this level of like peak performance flow that is often talked about in sports and business and everything, and that is the flow that we have lots of research around it. And that is also the flow that like most people get addicted to in sports and business, because in essence, flow is just a special state of human consciousness where we feel our best and where we can perform our best. And it feels so addicting because in the moment of this peak performance flow, we get a very special cocktail of neurotransmitters that from our brain that helps us feel this way, and that's why we get so addicted to it. And on the other side, we can just perform like super freely, everything feels effortlessly, we're kind of just in motion with everything that is around us, and we can excel on the highest levels. And that is the flow that we only need in specific moments of our days and our lives, because even though it feels great, this kind of flow is like super exhausting for our body. That is why after all those flow moments, we need time to recover to then later on enter a new flow cycle. And that will be reserved for like deep work sessions that we have in the day, maybe 1, 2, maximum 3 potentially deep work sessions for sports moments where we need to excel at the highest stage, or CEOs who need to deliver like a big speech in front of their company or have an investor talk or something like that. So that is the flow that we only need a couple of times a day and only in small amounts of moments. And then there's this underlying flow of life, how I call it, which is basically this feeling of being aligned with life, not fighting against life, not always creating suffering and resistance, because that's what we normally do. Like everything that happens around us, we normally switch into judgment mode immediately. And we say, okay, I like that, I don't like that, I want that, I don't want that. And by that, we're always creating resistance to the current of life. And if we are able to really kind of surrender and lean back and say, okay, I'm going to move with life here, because there is no other possibility if I want to be free from suffering and from this inner tension and resistance, then we have this underlying feeling being connected to life, being in the flow of life. And that is something that we, in the best case, can have like 24/7.
Patrick, do you think we can be free of judgment? Can we live our life without thinking that this is right and this is wrong?
I think we can if we would probably lock ourselves in some mountain cave for the next 20 to 30 years and just meditate. Because we probably see some enlightened beings all around the globe who maybe seem to have achieved this level of non-judgmental living. But on the other side, I think what we can achieve is a level where we are just able to create more space between this automatic judgmental reaction, where we maybe even in the first place, we switch into this judgment mode, but we become so conscious that we are aware of this judgment mode. And then in our second reaction, we can decide to let go of the judgment. So maybe being like outside and we enter a room and we see someone sitting in the cafe that we spend most time, and he is sitting at our most favorite place. And we think like, first reaction is like, damn, why is he blocking my space? And we immediately like build this resistance against this person. But maybe in the second reaction, we can let go of this and we just can sit next to this person on another table and maybe even start a conversation, say, hey, great place that you choose. I normally sit there always when I'm here. And then maybe we get in a conversation with this person and we realize, hey, it's actually a really cool conversational partner, and maybe a friendship or whatever develops from it, or only having a cool conversation. And then we leave the cafe with a smile on our faces because we didn't let ourselves be guided by this judgment and instead be guided by this state of surrender to the flow of life, if we want to call it like that.
So being okay of, if what I understand from you, we have to be okay with us being judgmental at times, because this is kind of our nature. And the thing is to have or make space for ourselves to not like between these judgmental moments to reflect and not stay in this autopilot, right? And also try to be in flow with it instead of resisting it.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. There's a beautiful quote from Viktor Frankl, who wrote the book Man's Search for Meaning, that I often use. And he just said that between stimulus and response, there is a space. And in this space lives our greatest freedom. And what we can always do is like, okay, there's the stimulus coming in. Maybe we switch into this judgment mode because it's just so ingrained in us. But then we can take just one deep breath and create space between the stimulus and response. And like think, okay, who do I want to be? Do I want to be this judgmental person right now? Or do I want to be open to what life offers me here?
I'm going to keep focusing now, since we started with the flow and the mind tools or mental tools. You mentioned before you are the CEO of your mind. And also, you become what you think about most of the time. How does this mindset show up in leadership, and how can you say maybe also some stories when you talk with CEOs and leaders about this? What change that makes when you see that is like you are talking about it and maybe you put them in practice?
Yeah, for sure. To really make it as easy as possible, in the end, the concept of being the CEO of your mind is basically just how our mind works. Because most people, probably in the beginning, when we start diving deeper into how our mind works and everything, we often feel like we are the slaves to our mind, because we feel like there's no possibility to escape this endless rut of like negative thinking and fears and anxiety and doubts. But then someday we wake up and realize that our mind is basically just our best assistant, if we want to call it like that, because our mind just delivers the answers and evidence to the questions that we were asking. So to an example, last year I was working with a leadership team of a software company, and during that time they were in a really like pressurized financial situation, and the CEO decided to take this leadership coaching because he wasn't really 100% happy with the way he showed up as a leader, but also how the leadership team worked. So when we started working together, he was basically always asking himself, why are the others not the leaders I want them to be? Why does the leadership team not work like super cooperative together? Why do they not create the success that we want as a company? So he basically was walking around the office all day looking for evidence why his leaders didn't show up the way he wanted them to be, why they were lacking leadership skills. And that was all he was seeing. So he was just looking for the failures and the lack in leadership skills within his leadership team and within himself. And that's how the brain works. We then just get evidence for all these situations. So it's okay, why do I lack leadership skills? Why am I not good enough as a leader? And then our brain just walks through our everyday experiences and even through everything that we remember and puts all the evidence in front of us at the desk and says, here are all the moments that you collected today that are evident for you not being good enough as a leader. And then at the end of the day, you just, feel shit because you have the feeling that you are not good enough as a leader and your team is neither. So we then in the beginning just basically switched this on its head and said, okay, why are your leaders growing every day? Why are you growing as a leader every day? What's the evidence that you have that your leadership team is working together better and better every day? What's the evidence that you have that you as a leader of this company can show up in a higher version of yourself every day? And from that moment on, he just started collecting evidence and situations and moments for exactly that. So at the end of the day, he also had this like huge stack of evidence on his desk in form of his thoughts in his mind. But this time they were all just evidence for him being a better leader today. There were moments where he saw that he can already be a good leader, that he can communicate clearly, that he can ask the difficult question, that he can enter and stay calm in difficult conversations, that he can lead his organization. And yes, there was still a lot of work to do, but all the work that came after would have never been successful if he would have stayed in this old perspective where he only was looking for the lack in leadership skills within himself, within his team, and the failures and everything that they did wrong.
I'm trying to think like this lawyer advocate, the devil advocate, and to see if someone wants to challenge this, would say, maybe this is kind of wishful thinking. Let's say I'm a leader and I see that the others are not performing. Yeah. And I would still see good things in them, but in the end, we will not reach anywhere. We will not go anywhere if there is no harmony there, right? So where is this balance between seeing everything as it is at the same time? I think also something you reminded me of, and I know that you love Tony Robbins, is priming, right? So from the beginning, how do you start in your head? And also you start with clear intention. How do I want to go with the other leaders? How do I communicate with them in a positive way, at the same time not letting other things go in the wrong direction?
Beautiful question, because it is just a matter of timing. I just had a conversation actually yesterday with an athlete that really is perfect for that, because he just sent me a message where he said, hey, I had a beautiful competition last week. I was able to put in practice a lot of the things that we trained together, that we were talking about, and I was able to end the race on podium, which was the biggest goal for me there. And I also was able to really see my potential and be able to compete with the biggest competitors that he has in his sport. And then within the message, he switched into like this inner critic mode where he said, so, okay, but there were also these things that didn't run wide, and there I have left potential out there, and maybe there I can prove. And then he finished the message with just saying, is it really good for me to switch into this like inner critic mode right now, or should I totally get rid of it? And then I just said to him, it's just, as in your question, a matter of timing, because what we do most of the time is we immediately switch into this inner critic mode, and then we only see the things that are not good yet, that need improvement, and then we are already primed to this negative perspective. And then there is no space anymore for the good things that are coming in. Like if we would sit together and I would run through a list of like 10 things that I think you can improve as a podcaster and entrepreneur and everything, and then afterwards I would tell you 10 things that I really like about your work, you would probably never remember the second list, because you're so primed and focused to the first thoughts of like you being not good enough and where you can improve. And you have already gone down this rabbit hole of all those negative thoughts that come with it. And you just ignore the second list with all the positive things. So the key here is to really just be able to switch those two parts, to, in the first place, be able to see the good things, to see the evidence for growth, the evidence for development. And then on the other side, okay, of course, as well as in sports and boardrooms and in organizations, of course, we need to be in this energy of the critic and to challenge things and to see, okay, where do we need to grow? Where are we missing things? Where are our blind spots? Because we don't want to live in this like fairy tale world where everything is like beautiful and great, and then someday we just ran into a wall because everything is crashing because we don't saw the things that needed improvement in the past. But we want to be able to switch between those energies in the right timing, first see the positive evidence, and then switch into improvement mode.
Great, Patrick. And since you talked about blind spots, I'm going to come now to the challenges in leadership. And the question is, from your work with athletes, with CEOs, with leaders, what are some of the biggest blind spots that leaders carry into decision making?
I think what mostly sabotages their decision making is, and this may sound contrary to a lot of leaders, is their attachment to numbers. And what I mean by that is not, as in the example before, is not to get rid of all your numbers and just decide without any evidence. But most leaders, they often only cling to the numbers, even if their gut and their intuition is telling them to choose otherwise. And if you really look at the most successful entrepreneurs on this planet and you watch interviews with them or you listen to interviews with them, you will find interviews from like Elon Musk, from Jeff Bezos and super high level entrepreneurs that always said that they made their biggest and most impactful decisions from pure intuition and not based on numbers. So that doesn't mean that you should not track your most important numbers, because that will give you the ability to really see how your organization is running and if you're moving in the right direction, and it will help you to early detect blind spots and things that need improvement. But when it comes to decision mode, you as a leader need to be able to connect to this intuitive voice within yourself. And it is basically the core of what I really do when I work with leaders, to really reconnect them to themselves, to be able to come from this place of intuition and not be guided by past experiences, not be guided by the mind, because that is the tricky thing, that we think we make rational decisions, but 99.9% of the cases, those rational decisions are impacted by everything we have experienced in the past, by all the failures we made. And often we just tend to repeat the same cycles over and over again because we cling to the same decisions that we always have been making. So we don't allow ourselves to make the switch and make a decision that is completely contrary to what we did in the past, but that may be the most expansive and most growthful thing that we can do for our organization right now. So I think really being able to get to this place of intuition, which is directly connected with a place of peace and calmness within. Because if we make decisions from an energy of stress and pressure, we will never make the best decisions around that. So there are lots of studies around that, how stress negatively impacts our ability to make decisions. And so we need to learn to really get to a calm space within, which is exactly the space where we also connect to our intuition, and then we will make the best decisions.
If you are enjoying the Core Impact podcast and feel inspired, let's connect on LinkedIn. You can search for my name, Omar El-Mamlouk, or click on the link in the description. I'd love to hear your thoughts or collaborate on projects around mental health and well-being at workplace, inclusive leadership, inner leadership, and the future of work. Let's co-create impact together.
This also reminds me of something you said before that I'm translating now. It's kind of, we already know what we need to know, right? Yeah. And also, if I remember in myself, and I think everyone who is listening also can relate to that, the biggest decisions we made and the most fulfilling ones in our life, they came after we did it also from our intuition. I think it's not only Jeff Bezos and all these leaders. Now, also the question, how, if we know already what we need to know, if I take it like in a superficial way, doesn't that contradict with the willingness and this desire for us to learn?
Not really, at least how I see it. Because yes, everything we need to know is already within us, but that doesn't mean that we have access to it. So it's like the example of a big library. So imagine a library with all the knowledge that we as humans collected in all the ages. So all human knowledge is within this library, and you enter this space and you know, okay, everything that I need to know is within here. But it doesn't mean that you already have read all the books and you already know all books from within. So that's the same for us. So if we will really get to this place, we see everything that I need to know is within us, but it doesn't mean that I directly have access to it. And the path of learning is to get access to all those aspects of knowledge that are hidden within ourselves, to all this wisdom, and really be able to remember all this.
Patrick, when you were talking, I had goosebumps. I really felt it. Wow. And I really like the example or the metaphor. There is another thing that I'd like to dive deep into, because also you mentioned it a bit, and I know that you bring awareness into it, which is negative bias. What is negative bias, and how also this affects leaders in everyday life?
It basically reconnects to the aspect that we were talking about before with the CEO of our mind, because negative bias is just the way our mind is primed to primarily see threats and danger in our lives, which is just something that is still within us from the ages where we just were just sitting around the fire, where we needed to be able to detect danger, because if there was like an animal around the corner that could kill us, we needed to be aware of that. And back in those days, there weren't no abilities to hide ourselves really from those animals. We had no houses that protected us. We had no weapons and whatsoever. So we were not living in the same safe spaces that we do today. But this bias is still ingrained in us. We tend to see all the threats and dangers and negative things first. And then we already primed by that, and we live in this negative bias. And we really have to relearn how to see the positive things, how to see the things that we are grateful for. And if we stay in this negative bias, we will not only be in a world where we for ourselves have the feeling that everything is negative and everything is a potential threat and danger, and there is no like vision for improvement in the future, but we will also directly impact all the people around us with this negative bias. So we all have been around people probably who have primarily been stuck in this negative bias, and you can extract those people and put them in the most beautiful places with the most beautiful vacation home, and they will still find something that they don't like. For example, I just remember my grandma, who, yes, sometimes tends to be a lot in this negative bias, but she's already 75, almost 75 now. And for last Christmas, we gifted her and her man a holiday close to their home where they could spend some days in a really cool hotel. And it was also connected with some talks with a former sea jumper, an athlete that they admired in the past, and they were able to talk to him. So it was like really cool experience. The first thing when they came back that they told us was like, when we were sitting at dinner, it took almost 2 hours until we were finished with dinner. So they were just like complaining that the dinner took too long. And we were just thinking like, there was nothing else for you to do. Why could you not sit there and enjoy the dinner for 2 hours? But it was them like just immediately switching into this negative bias. And then just after it, and when I was like asking directly for it, they were able to say, oh yeah, and by the way, we had the most beautiful room in the hotel. We could directly see the mountains, and the talk with this former athlete was great. It was super silent. He was talking a lot and he was super talkative, and it was a great experience and I really enjoyed it. But her first reaction was like, okay, this was not that optimal. And she immediately switched into this negative bias, and that is just what happens if we don't escape it.
I'd like also to hear sorry from you. Let's talk about the shift. So when we talk about either negative bias or all this negativity, or let's say survivorship mode, do you have any experience or story that you can say you worked with a client, with the CEO, any leader that changed from the survival mode to the creative mode, let's say, and how did this shift affected him or her?
Yes, I can. I just finished actually a 6-month coaching container with a COO from a big medical company, and he's responsible for 500 leaders in the German location, and they are part of a bigger US company. And when we started working together in the beginning of the year, he was in a state where he was like super exhausted. He was super stressed. He's already 61. He had a lot of leadership experience, but he was super exhausted. Communication with the headquarters in the US was super stressful because they kept switching CEOs and there was no like real clarity, and they felt like the US headquarters just forced everything on them. And he was like super close to thinking about leaving this job that he did for the last 10 to 15 years. And he really loved this job in general because he loves to work with people. He loves the people that he works with in his location. He built a cool leadership team that he also takes to some retreats during the year. So he already did so many things great, but he was still in this operating energy of like stress, pressure, conflict, and that just drained his energy every day. And we then not only started switching his focus to see the positive things, but we really started from where he led, the energy that he led. So really see, okay, now you're right now you're leading from pressure, from stress, from this inner conflict, this fighting against all the things that for you seem bad. Let's switch this. Let's get to an energy where you feel calm inside yourself. So really working with his nervous system and really calming down, because most leaders, when they have this constant stress, their nervous system is just in a constant battle for survival. And in this constant battle of survival, we just feel like energy is draining from us in such big amounts that even if we do nothing during a day, it feels exhausting. And we started really doing this nervous system work together. We started doing breathwork together. We implemented some new routines for him together. And also we implemented this like mindset of flow and ease and inner freedom for him, which basically just simply starts with asking yourself, what if it were easy? And if you really apply this in a moment where you feel stuck in a situation, where you feel super stressed, where you don't know where to go, and then you just sit back and you ask yourself, okay, what if it were easy? You just open new doors of consciousness that have never been available for you before. And all of a sudden, you enter a new room, you enter new possibilities. And if you do this in combinement with a calm nervous system, it's just a completely different energy that you can come from and lead from. And for him, he was able to really turn this around. For him, over the past 6 months, his organization in Germany went through a big reorganization, and he was able to guide them all through it from a really smooth energy, not having the feeling of being exhausted. And just in our last session that we had, he said to me, to be honest, right now, in my everyday work, I feel the same energy that I normally only have when I'm on holiday. And so also his wife told him that he seemed to be super calm and she didn't know where this came from. And so he got a lot of feedback also from the outside that he had changed his energy and that others could feel the new freedom and ease and calmness that he carried. And that was just a way for him to really change his leadership experience for himself and also for everyone around him.
I'm curious, Patrick, when you work with such clients and you said you implemented some routines, do you usually have like a package of routines that you tell them, this is 1, 2, 3, breath work, meditation, journaling, or anything else? Or you adjust it depending on the client and how it affects him most?
It always is the second path. Of course, when I started out a couple of years ago, I had this toolbox and I said, okay, we always do this, this, this. And then over the years, as with my own journey, I realized that, of course, everybody is unique and we always need a unique approach and strategy for every person, for every single person. And of course, there can be similarities and something that has worked for others in the past can as well work for you or every other person. But the beginning is always to really look at, okay, where are you right now? What is really, what are the triggers in your everyday life? What is stressing you? Where's the resistance? And also, what are the possibilities that we have to integrate routines? What are the routines that you connect most with? And of course, this starts with us just trying some routines. So to really say, okay, here's a breathwork routine. I want you to try this for the next week. And then when we reconnect next week, we're going to see how it worked and if we can keep it or if we need to adjust something. And then over time, we just find the right routines and the right operating system for you that you can implement for yourself so that you leave this space of us working together with exactly the strategies that work for you. And that may not be working for anybody else on the planet, but it works for you and that matters most.
Another one that I really love is what you said, if it were easy. And I was, what if it were easy? And I think, and I thought about how many problems I know from people around me. When I hear about the problem, I said, and they are making it so big, but it is easy. I see it. Maybe also I could be biased. And even when I think about many problems that I had in my life, I said, okay, it could have been easier if I just made it easy, I think. So I think this is a very, very important and I would say important thought that you brought here, and it's very great to think about how to implement it. Do you feel inspired by this conversation? If that's the case, please share that with me, write me a comment, and share it with a friend that you know will benefit from this podcast. Core Impact Podcast is on YouTube, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and all other major platforms. Now, you reminded me also of something else that you said, that affirmations could not always be beneficial, but we can try reframe affirmations in a form of question, right? Would you like to expand on this?
Yeah, for sure. It's something that I just came across on my own journey, because early on when I started this path of personal development, almost 12, 13 years ago now, I stumbled upon this technique of affirmations really quickly. And then I connected with it and I thought, okay, sounds great. I only have to tell myself all those sentences over and over again, and someday I'm going to be living in this new reality. So I printed them all out in my flat back then, and I put them in my bathroom mirror and on the fridge and beside my bed and as a background screen of my phone, everywhere I could see them over the days. And always I found myself that they were not really working the way I thought they were working, because there was always this background noise who tried to sabotage this affirmation. For example, if I was standing in front of my bathroom mirror and I was going through just a simple affirmation to say, okay, I am rich, there would be this subtle voice inside my head to say, nope, please look at your bank account. You are not rich. So the second I said this affirmation, and of course, this is just a super simple affirmation, and there are more elevated ways to do this, but always, every time we just use this part, there's this voice of our subconscious that is sabotaging it and telling us that things are not the way we say they are. And I just realized for myself that if we ask the right questions, I help my mind to work with me instead of against me. So if I stand in the same situation in front of the bathroom mirror and I ask myself, why am I rich? My mind has no ability to sabotage it. Dasarstedt is, he needs to be on board to search for evidence. And then I basically start thinking, okay, I am rich because I have a great family and we have a lot of our family and I love in our family. Okay, I am rich because I can basically live in this great apartment here and I can pay my rent every day. My fridge is full. I am rich because I can travel the world whenever I want to. So basically, doors are opening up with things that give me the evidence that I am rich, which have not been there yet before. And then all of a sudden, I get the feeling of, yes, I am rich. And that is exactly the feeling that we want with the affirmation. But if we use like this normal affirmation with I am rich, we have to go through it maybe 1 million times until our mind finally stops sabotaging it. But if we use the question, our mind will be on board from the first second on, and then it will be much easier to get to this feeling of I am rich, I am healthy, I'm successful, whatever it is that we want to achieve with the affirmation, just by switching to the right question.
Mm-hmm. Patrick, there is one thing also that you mentioned before, it's the win. And I think about the win as a win, really, which is what is important, right? What is important now? So is the in. So what is important now? Every time since I heard this first time from you, every time I think about it, whatever I'm doing, most of the times when I think, okay, I'm doing something that is not really important now, like now, the conversation, the most important thing is to be with you. Not to think about the next question, for example, not to think about, I don't know, what we're going to do after or anything else. It's just to be present with you. I would like to, from you to tell me, how do you also apply it in practice and how can you really be present? And can you be always present, by the way?
Yes, super important focus. Of course, like probably the same that you were asking with the negative bias and everything before, I think we can be present all the time, but maybe not right now in like a 24 hour window, because it just needs such a big level of awareness to be present in our modern world. If we would like move out to nature, completely disconnected from the world and just living our life there, it would probably be much easier to be present. But in this world here, we have lots of responsibilities, we have lots of impulses from the outside, we have lots of distractions. So the ability to be present already like became a superpower in the modern world, I would say, because it's so hard to achieve for most people. But on the other side, it can be easy to be in this state of presence, which is basically, for me, the most important thing is to always reconnect with my body, with my breath, especially because the breath is basically the coolest tool for presence that we carry with us. Our breath is always available every day. We are breathing in every moment. And if we are really focused on our breath, we are automatically present because we cannot breathe in the future. We cannot breathe in the past. If we are breathing consciously, we are breathing here right now in this moment. So whenever we really reconnect with our breath, we immediately enter the space of presence. And that is something that we can do almost every day in super small situations. So even though when we are sitting here in our interview and you are talking and I like find my head thinking about things that maybe come up today and what I'm going to buy later on when I go shop groceries and everything, I can really just reconnect to my breath. It's like, okay. Like you said before, connect to the breath and then also for the mind to guide him back to the present moment, this question of what's important now, to then really see, okay, yeah, the most important thing is to sit right here with Omar, to be present and to be in this interview space until we are finished. And that is something that we do every day. And of course, there are lots of other opportunities to really be present, because we can basically use all our five senses to come back to the present moment. We can use our breath, we can use smell, we can use all the things that we can hear right now, really. So if we, even if we sit in a noisy environment and we feel distracted, we can even use the noise to be present. That is something that I often do with my athletes, because if they enter like a big stadium and there are like 80,000 people around them, of course it's super noisy, it's super distracting. But if they just close their eyes, and if you keep just listening to the voices and the sounds that you can hear, you immediately switch into present mode, even though it is super noisy and it's super distracting, but you just focus on the essence of it, which is just the noises happening right now. And we can use what we can see right now. So if we really focus on something that is just happening in front of us, we can immediately switch back to this present mode. But to really sustain it, like I said before, it needs to be connected with our nervous system and the way we breathe. There's a beautiful quote, I don't know from whom it is, but he's basically said, how we breathe controls the level of consciousness that we can enter. So if we change our rates of breathing, we basically switch stages of consciousness. And that just means that if we are breathing like super, super fast and we're super stressed, then it will be super hard to stay in the present moment, because our nervous system is still in a stress and survival mode. But if we connect with our breath, calming down, and then focus on something that is happening right now, it will be much easier to really stay in this presence. And over time, the more often we do it, those small moments of presence will connect during the day, and all of a sudden we will have the feeling that, oh wow, for the last hour I was so present that I didn't really remember anything around me. I was so focused on what I was doing. And maybe then I get taken out of this presence by my phone ringing or whatever is happening, but I have been more present during a longer period of time.
Thank you, Patrick, for this, and for bringing this also again, the breath. I'd like to understand here. So every time you think about, for example, what is important for me now, you think one of the methods to apply it to, you think about your breath, right? Or you feel your breath more. And if you do it more often, then it will be more natural for you to breathe deeply. Like, it's most of the time, maybe throughout the days or the years while you're doing this, you feel that most of the time you are like, you don't have this superficial breath.
Yes, of course. I mean, basically everything that we today in the modern world experience as something negative, let it be this constant distraction, this constant state of being in the past, being in the future, this thinking that is not connected to the present moment, the states of anxiety, doubts, this negative thinking, this inner stress response that is constantly going on, we basically trained ourselves to be in this state. Or for some, maybe even better be said, we have been trained to be in the state. They may not train themselves consciously to be in the state, but we have been trained to be in the state. And of course, we can also train ourselves to be in a state of presence, of really deep breathing, of consciously thinking about positive things or something that is really connected to the right now and here. So we can, of course, train ourselves. And the more we do it, the more natural it becomes to us and the more easy it feels for us to really be in this state. So it's like with every skill that we need to acquire, the more often we do it, the more natural it becomes. And the same is with our deep breathing, with our flexible nervous system, with our ability to be present. We can train this, and then at some point it will be just natural to us.
What I like also about this, that while I'm talking to you, I can always do it directly. Like, I'm talking to you and I'm breathing now. Because we are talking about it, I'm breathing more deeply and I directly feel calmer. And that's one of the things that when people say, okay, maybe you are talking a lot about positive thinking or whatever, I don't know, what all this self-help or anything like this, it might be something that almost wishful thinking, etc. But there are so many practices that you can, just by practicing it, feel the difference immediately. I would like to talk to you. Hey, you want to comment on this?
No, I think what you said is basically just the perfect example for how easy it can be. Because that's how I always start my conversations with everyone I'm talking to. They may be in a situation that is super hard for them and they have been trying to escape the situation for years, maybe even decades. But I really think that it can be easy, because if we start with those simple things, like one conscious breath, we just feel an immediately drop of stress and we feel this relaxation going through our body. And of course, for some people, this may disappear with the next breath because they fall back into old patterns. But if you can do it with one breath and you can bring in some relaxation, then you can expand it from there, and it can be easy, because often it is just like really this one breath that is building the bridge from this old world to a new world where they really have this inner freedom.
Patrick, since you are talking about the new world, I would like to talk about the future now a bit with you. And from your experience, what are the top three core skills that leaders must have in the next decade?
Ooh, great question. I think number one, for me at least, will be, if I want to bring it down to one word, it's going to be self-leadership. Because the way we lead ourselves is the way we lead others. And if we are not able to hold ourselves in a space of calmness and purpose and presence and expansiveness, then we will not be able to hold others in it. So the we carry and lead ourselves will be the role model for how we lead others. And that will be core skill number one. The second for me is empathy. Because I think most conflicts in organizations arise from a lack of empathy between the leaders and the team. Maybe it goes both ways, but if we want to talk from a leadership perspective, really not being able to step into the shoes of your teammate and really get a feeling for what does this actually mean for them? How do they actually feel? Struggles are they facing on an everyday basis? If we don't have this level of empathy, it will be super hard to help them develop themselves and be in a space where they feel they are acknowledged, they can expand themselves, and they can really grow as a person, and they are accepted the way they are. And the third skill that for me directly connects with this is communication. Because we can have the best self-leadership, we can be the best role model in the world, we can have the highest level of empathy, but if we cannot communicate this empathy and everything that comes from this deep level of self-leadership that we have, nothing will grow. So we need to be able to communicate in a way that enables others to grow, to connect, to see our perspective, to bring in their perspective. So I think the best leaders in the future will be the ones who are able to lead themselves on the highest level, to empathically connect to others, and to really communicate on a way that creates possibilities and connection.
I like the word also you said, possibilities, many times. I'd like to tell you about the possibility now. If you imagine, like, close your eyes, it's just put it, it's something out of our mind, let's say. And you say, if we wake up now in 2035, how would the workplaces be if everything went in the best scenario you can imagine?
Love this question. For me, workplaces will be just an expansion of our lives. It will be a place where we go to grow, to connect with others, to create an impact in the world, and also a place where we find deep purpose to what we are doing. A place that gives us a lot of energy and really adds on to the quality of life that we have, and basically gives us the opportunity to be our best selves.
I would like to end now with two questions about call to action. The first one is, what advice would you give someone who feels the pressure to perform but longs for freedom?
I think the first step should always be to create some space for yourself and to really get clear on who I am right now and how do I operate and feel on a daily basis right now. And then on the other side is, who do I actually want to be? How do I want to feel every day? And this feeling is really at the core of it, because if we look from this perspective, it doesn't really matter that much what you are doing, but if you're stuck in this old pressurized performance world, it really comes down to how do you want to feel on a daily basis, and then everything else can grow from there. And if you know where you are and where you want to go, then it's basically just looking for the next steps of growth that can take you there and build the bridge to this new world.
I love it. How there is the feeling, like really, if you think about it, let's imagine me or anyone who's listening, you have everything you dream of, like really everything material, whatever it is, the job you want to be, you have your own business, relationship, wherever you want to live. But if you cannot feel what you are saying, you cannot feel, for example, joy, or you don't feel the connection, or you don't feel happy, grateful, then it doesn't matter. And the other way around, even if you don't have anything but you are grateful, then it's more important. It's not either or. I mean, you can always strive for achieving what you want, but it starts with this feeling, and it's a great reminder. The other one, call it to action, is if you could leave a message to the audience about self-mastery, presence, or leadership, what would you like to share as a call to action in the end?
Yeah. I think it basically comes down to the essence of, if you wanna be a great leader, if you wanna build something that helps others, you have to start with yourself and the energy that emanates from you. Because if you are building your family, your business, your organization, your team from an energy of stress, of pressure, of constant inner struggle, this will flow into everything that you do, and your company, your family, your team will be impacted by this energy of stress, pressure, and conflict. And on the other side, if you start building from peace, from presence, from connection to yourself, this will impact everyone around you and everything around you as well. And this will be the biggest impact that you can actually create.
Patrick, I'm gonna ask you a follow-up question, although it should have been one of the last. But let's say for me, I want to apply it for myself. And let's say I was stressful lately, or I will be stressful in the future. And I have this, and I remember Patrick said this. Okay, when I'm stressed, anxious, worried in any state like that. And I'm already having my connection, my family, etc. Is it better for me to go out or make space for myself first in order to come back with a peaceful, joyful, loving state, or to be authentic, to stay here and share my feelings with them?
It depends, and I think it probably most of the times goes both ways. Because if you, for example, if you're now engaged with your family, and then you just feel this level of stress and pressure within you, and you feel the need to go out and create space for yourself. If you just do this without communication, it will probably create conflict with your family. But if you just communicate, to say with your wife, for example, say, okay, I feel like I need a couple of minutes for myself in order to show up here as the best husband and father that I could be, then hopefully, if you have a great relationship and you've built the spaces for within, your wife will say, okay, take your time, let's go out. That's how I do it with my wife. If I feel this, I just say, I need 5 minutes. And of course, you not always have those 5 minutes. There are situations where you cannot escape, and then it's just a matter of creating the space within you in this moment of pressure and chaos. And that is also possible. But if you have the time and you can just take your 5 minutes, then do it and come back as a more aligned version of yourself.
I love the discussion with you. And it's not only about what you said, but also the energy that you brought and the connection, especially that you are someone who was doing sport and known for doing sport, but connecting the body with the mind, with the feelings, like these three together. And so I felt also this during your presence here, and I had so many impulses that I will use in my life. And I hope also that everyone is listening to also enjoyed, got something to inspired by and something to implement in their life. Do you have anything that you like to share in the end that we haven't talked about, or anything? It's always like an open question for you to share anything, any thought that I haven't, maybe questions that I haven't asked you, or anything that you'd like to share with the people who are listening.
I think we've discussed lots of super important topics, and I really enjoyed the conversation. It was an honor to be here. And of course, if anybody wants to connect with me afterwards, we will probably have links for it in the show notes, and they can find me mostly on LinkedIn, especially for the leaders. And super happy to connect with everyone. And yeah, super grateful for having the opportunity to spend this last more than an hour with you here.
Thank you, Patrick. And also for everyone who especially speaks German, you have your own podcast other than the book that you've written. And yeah, they can also listen more to your insights if they enjoyed it. So I'm gonna...
Thank you, Omar. See you.
If you have enjoyed this podcast, feel free to connect with us on LinkedIn and to follow the podcast on YouTube, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and all other major platforms. Enjoy every moment. Until next time.